From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Goal! Yes! Man, USA, USA all day, baby. What a thrilling win over Ghana yesterday. Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Do we have a show in store for you all today? In just a moment, I'll be talking with Terry Kilday, the Director of Marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. We'll talk about all of the US Open action over the weekend as Martin Keimer really just brought it all weekend. And also some pretty cool events coming directly from Hawk Hollow Golf Property. So you don't want to miss my interview with Terry. That'll be around the 1:15 mark. In our second segment of the show, we'll talk about Jarrell Campbell as some news broke from him yesterday, as you'll hear in just a moment in our current sports quick hit headliners. The Tigers' woes continue, specifically for Justin Verlander. And Top 5 Tuesday, folks, we're staying with the World Cup tradition and giving you the Top 5 World Cup moments. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on the show, here are your current sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Matthew Lutke, and these are your current sports quick hit headliners for today, Tuesday, June 17th. Detroit Cass Tech quarterback Jarrell Campbell is no longer heading to Michigan State. I would say I've opened up the recruiting process again and decommitted from Michigan State, Campbell said in an interview with Detroit's WXYZ-TV that aired late Monday night. I'm just trying to enjoy the recruitment process for my last year of high school. Campbell, a 2015 recruit, will be a senior this fall, made a verbal commitment in August to play for Michigan State. That was before he was arrested for body slamming a 23-year-old Cass Tech security officer in January. The incident was, of course, caught on video and widely circulated. Campbell told WXYZ he's been taking anger management classes on Saturdays and was sentenced to 60 days in jail, probation, and community service last month for the assault that occurred on school grounds. He must turn himself in on July 28th, which gives him time to complete summer school. Cass Tech football coach Thomas Wilcher told WXYZ that Campbell is now considering Cincinnati, Miami, Florida, and LSU. According to Rivals.com, he also has scholarship offers from the likes of Alabama, Notre Dame, and Wisconsin. In other off-the-field incident news, Michigan offensive lineman Graham Glasgow pleaded guilty today to a charge of operating a vehicle while visibly impaired. Glasgow pleaded down from the original charge of operating while intoxicated and will face up to 93 days in jail and a fine of up to $350 when he is sentenced at 10 a.m. on July 14th. With his attorney beside him, Glasgow confirmed that he consumed alcohol before driving on March 15th. The offensive lineman, who is 6 feet 6 inches and 308 pounds, said he began drinking in his house, started somewhere around 4 p.m. and had, he's not quite sure how much, somewhere from 10 to 12 drinks. The Michigan State hockey program announced its complete 2014-15 schedule. The Spartans will play 14 non-conference games, including 7 against opponents from the Hockey East Conference and 3 against schools from both the ECAC and WCHA. The 20-game Big Ten schedule will begin in late November, with the Spartans traveling to Ohio State. After hosting Minnesota the first weekend of December, MSU will play their final 16 conference games beginning in mid-January at Penn State. The 2015 Big Ten tournament will be held March 19th to the 21st at Joe Louis Arena. The tournament features all 6 teams in a single elimination format. Former MSU women's basketball player Satara Washington has been hired as an assistant coach at Western Michigan. Washington, a Kalamazoo native, served as a grad assistant at MSU before being added to the Canisius coaching staff last summer. Shane Klipfel, Western's head coach, had previously coached Washington during her playing days at MSU. Another subpar outing from Justin Verlander saw the Tigers' AL Central lead dwindle to just a half game as the Royals' 11-8 win pulled them closer in the standings. Former Tiger Omar Infante had 4 RBIs for the Royals, as Verlander allowed 7 runs for the second consecutive outing. The Tigers rallied in a 6-run ninth, including J.D. Martinez's grand slam with two outs, but ultimately fell short of a thrilling comeback. Max Scherzer takes the mound tonight, facing Kansas City's Yordano Ventura. Miami Heat forward and former Detroit Country Day star Shane Battier has officially retired from the NBA. Battier, who won two titles with the Heat and a national championship at Duke, had initially announced intentions to hang him up in March. In other hardwood news, coach Doc Rivers has been promoted to the president of basketball operations for the LA Clippers. Kevin Eastman will take over the vice president role previously held by Rivers. Doc led the Clippers to a franchise-best 57 wins last season and a spot in the Western Conference semifinals. In the NFL, Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice and his wife met with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell in New York. The league could fine and suspend Rice under the personal conduct policy. This is his first major off-the-field incident. Rice, of course, was arrested and charged with assault, domestic violence on February 15th after an altercation with Janae Palmer in an Atlantic City hotel. He pleaded not guilty and was later accepted into a pretrial intervention program last month. And finally, in World Cup action, the United States won its first game in the Cup, beating Ghana 2-1. Ghana tied the game up at 1 with 8 minutes left, but the U.S. struck back with a John Brooks Jr. goal with 4 minutes left in the second half. Clint Dempsey scored the first goal for the Americans just 29 seconds into the game, and the Americans held on to a one-goal lead throughout the first half. They'll play Portugal next Sunday on June 22nd. That ends your current sports quick hit headliners for today. We'll now send it back to Al to start the show.
Wow, thanks a lot, Matt. Those were your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know that number. Yes, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. What a thrilling win from the U.S. of A yesterday as they topped Ghana. My goodness. I mean, the first 30 seconds of the match, the U.S. goes up 1-0. I mean, it was unbelievable watching that. Just an incredible moment. It was pretty cool watching the coverage on television from ESPN as they had cameras set up from anywhere from Chicago to Afghanistan to multiple locations throughout the U.S. showing the reactions from different people to that goal and that early lead for the U.S. It was unbelievable. I just about lost my mind because I happened to be driving in my car as that goal happened, and I could not believe that quick. It was the sixth fastest goal in World Cup history. In the blink of an eye, the U.S. goes up. Unbelievable stuff. And for those of you, you know, like me, who I'm not a soccer enthusiast. I wouldn't say I'm a diehard soccer fan, but I do watch the World Cup every 4 years when it comes around. I fell in love back in 2006 with the whole France and Italy, Zinedine Zidane headbutt. And, I watch it when it comes around, and, you know, it seems like it gets better and better each and every time I watch it. Just a thrilling time for the U.S. We're going to dive into that game and talk about just the fiasco where that was, the U.S. World Cup yesterday, and talk about the team moving forward, because even though it was a great win over Ghana yesterday, they did have two guys go down, especially Jozy Altidore. His loss for the team now, as he went out pretty early in that game. We'll talk about the future of this team now, as their next match will be against Portugal in the great Cristiano Ronaldo. So it's going to be an interesting match moving forward. But, man, what a great start for the U.S. of A. Again, we'll take your calls on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And as Matt just alluded to in our current sports quick hit headliners, how about J. Rule Campbell, huh, folks? Now, last week, we had told you all that J. Rule will be making his decision on his football future on Monday, and he did it through Channel 7 News in Detroit. As Matt talked about at the beginning of our headliners, he has decommitted from Michigan State University, folks. Now, of course, he does have to, you know, report for that 60-day jail sentence. He will be able to still take summer classes, though, so his academics will still be intact in that regard. But he also does have offers from other schools, such as Cincinnati, Miami, and LSU. So it's not like this kid, you know, has totally ruined any possible dreams and hopes of him playing college football. You know, I like to see that because it seems as though, looking at his interview yesterday, that Jarrell Campbell seems to be very genuinely sorry about how the entire situation went down. And, you know, I definitely sense a lot of remorse from him. So I'm glad that, you know, even though he has decommitted from MSU, Even though in that regard, he still has other offers from other schools and we'll still possibly see him on the gridiron in the college game. Hey, that's great, because I totally thought when this situation definitely ensued that he had totally ruined his college football future. So we'll take your calls on that, too. Again, that's going to be during our second segment of Current Sports. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And last but not least, Top 5 Tuesday, folks. Each and every Tuesday, we have a special segment to bring to you entitled Top 5 Tuesday. And today, we're definitely basking in the World Cup glory, if you will. Today's Top 5 Tuesday will be centered around the Top 5 World Cup moments of all time. So, again, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Well, let's take a break from the soccer action. Let's talk a little golf, one of my favorite hobbies, definitely my favorite hobby to play. I love getting out there on the links and trying to get my Al Woods on, if you will. And we invite a man who knows all things golf. He is certainly a friend of the show. We had him on last summer, and we invite him again today. Terry Kilday, the director of marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. Terry, how you doing? Thanks for joining me today.
I'm great, Al. How about yourself?
Oh, doing very well. So glad that you could join us today to talk a little golf. You know, now, you know, this past weekend, you know, even though, as I stated, the World Cup is going on, everybody seems to be losing their mind about soccer. But, you know, there was a pretty big major that took place over the weekend, the U.S. Open, of course, and Martin Keimer just made it look like slight work throughout those four rounds, and he took away the U.S. Open crown. For you, I just want to get your thoughts on Martin Keimer's performance at the U.S. Open, and did you expect that at all from Martin? He really turned it up to another level, Terry.
Well, he did win the Players, which is probably borderline the fifth major and stuff, but he was kind of struggling down the end of the Players and could have been caught. But it just looked like he was playing a different golf course here the last 4 days of when the U.S. Open there at Pinehurst. And he was just completely under control. And, you know, you go out 65-65 on any U.S. GA setup course, and it's incredible. So it was a great win.
Yes, it certainly was. And, you know, looking at the golf rankings right now, Adam Scott is still holding down the world's number one ranking spot. Do you buy that Adam Scott is right now the world's number one golfer and is playing the best golf out of anybody?
No, I don't. Just the short. But, no, I don't think he just struggles too often with a putter to ever be that. You know, he won the right tournaments and – but again, I think it was others falling back that helped him. But no, I think there's better players out there, definitely.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Terry. I think the rankings can certainly be deceiving in many regards. And, of course, you know, this is something that we've talked about, you know, throughout the past few weeks, especially when we heard the news that, yes, Tiger Woods will be out of the U.S. Open due to that back injury. He's still trying to recover from that surgery. The Tiger effect is certainly something that's without a doubt real, Terry. And, you know, you look at the numbers, you know, from a, you know, if Tiger's playing in an event compared to when he's not, I mean, they are certainly alarming. I mean, how bad does the PGA need Tiger Woods in your view, Terry?
I think desperately at this point in time, you know, it's no secret the golf industry is not really in any stretch of imagination in a growth mode. And in your business, I think the terminology is move the needle. And mm-hmm. And Tiger Woods moves the needle, you know, and he does get the casual golfer to at least tune in and see if he's anywhere near the lead. And if he is, you know, the whole broadcast. And boy, when he's not there, they're watching World Cup soccer.
Right. That's very, very true. Now, if you're at a PGA, I mean, how do you try to combat his absence, you know, especially once he does retire, Terry?
Well, you know, they do have a couple aces in the hole, Ricky Fowler definitely being one of them. You know, the kids adore him. You watch it. I do, you know, as you know, some officiating around the state. And mm-hmm. you go to these junior tours, and these kids are dressed like Ricky Fowler to the max and stuff. And, you know, if he could win a major, he finished second there. He was in the final group, but nobody was going to touch Keimer. But if he could win a major, he might be the next it guy to really capture people's attention.
For you, Terry, I mean, have you ever seen anything like you know, the Tiger Woods fiasco, especially during, you know, the prime of Tiger Woods when he was just completely dominant in the game? Have you ever seen anything like that?
Well, Al, you know, I'm one generation later, and I would tell you, yes, I definitely did with Nicklaus. I think
right.
Nicklaus handled his peers and intimidated his peers without being anything other than just a great player, to the same degree that Tiger did. And arguably, he had a lot stiffer competition. He had the Johnny Miller, the Weisskopf, Trevino for sure, Gary Player. You know, he was getting a little bit on the tail end of Palmer, but he had guys that just pushed him to the wall all the time. And, you know, besides the 18 majors, I believe there was another 17 times that he had finished second in a major, you know, where he was right there knocking on the door. So, and I'm a Tiger Woods fan, so don't think I'm knocking him here and stuff. But
right.
I think Jack to this day can hold his head up high that he was the guy for his generation as much as Tiger is for this generation.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we're talking with Terry Kilday, the Director of Marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. And Terry, you know, Tiger going through this incredible slump that he's been going through. He hasn't won a major in quite some time now. And, you know, the talk around the town is always whether or not he will be able to catch the great Jack Nicklaus when it comes to majors. Do you think Tiger will ever be the same? And will he ever eclipse that record?
I vacillate on this question a lot, but I guess in my heart of hearts, I think he will. And it all hinges on this latest round of health and stuff. But if he's healthy, he's got still 7 years of going at this, you know, which is 28 majors. And I still think he's disciplined enough. You know, the guys don't fear him like they did. But, mm-hmm. you know, I do think he'll get there. I don't know if he'll break it, but I think he'll get to 18.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think, you know, it may take some time, especially now with this whole surgery, which is certainly a roadblock, but I do see him getting there eventually. All right, Terry, well, let's shift gears really quick and definitely talk about what you do. And, you know, something really cool when doing some research here, the Drive, Chip, and Putt contest. Can you talk about, you know, that a little bit, you know, to our listeners who don't know what that is?
Well, first of all, something really cool today and right now, as a matter of fact, your listeners might be interested in if they're near either of our courses.
Yeah.
Is the head professional from Augusta National, because as you know, the Masters is tied in very closely with the USGA and the PGA. The head professional is out there at the West Range at Hawk Hollow, and the kids are competing right now for their first step of going to the Masters next April for a Drive, Chip, and Putt championship.
Right.
And it's going to be pretty cool to see these youngsters out there. The course is all decked out with PGA banners and everything else. I know there's some TV stations that are coming out and film and stuff. So they're going to have the big time atmosphere. And this is step one. But if your listeners are driving down Chandler Road, you know, I would encourage them to slide in for a minute or two. And after that brief advertisement, I just say I think it's so cool, this initiative. You're very familiar with punt, pass, and kick.
Right.
And different things like this. And for our sport, it's the equivalent now. And, man, to go to the Sunday before the Masters and be putting on the 18th green on national television, that's a pretty big carrot to put out in front of a youngster.
Yes, without and how old are these kids, Terry?
They have to be seven, and it's by gender and it's by age. So, you know, a seven-year-old's not competing with a 15-year-old, but there's four age brackets for each gender. I believe it goes 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and then 13, 14, 15.
So in total, how many kids could have the opportunity to go to the Masters?
I believe it's a dozen in each bracket that actually end up there next April. Three will move on in each bracket from Hawk Hollow to and there's other initial stages going on all this month. And they'll go to Prestwick, which is down by Howell and Highland area. They'll go to Prestwick, and then the ones that come out of that one will go to Augusta next April.
Oh, wow. And how long does this last? How long does the competition last? It starts today?
I think we're the very first one in Michigan. I know we are. And like I say, the local qualifiers, for want of a better word, will go through the end of this month. And then I think they go to Prestwick later in July. So it's done before school starts back up.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Then they've got 7 months of anticipation before April rolls around next year, and then they go to the Magic Kingdom down there for golf.
Wow, that is too cool, Terry. You know, like you said, I mean, this is so cool. You got kids from all ages competing in this drive, chip, and putt contest. And there's a high motivating factor with the chance to possibly, you know, go to the Masters. That's a pretty big deal, Terry. Do you see younger and younger kids over time getting more and more involved in the game of golf, or do you see a different trend?
A little bit different trend, and again, it breaks my heart. But, you know, we're a little too much time for youngsters, and we're exploring a lot of different things. And we, I mean, our industry, as you know, we've got a 12-hole golf course now designed to hold their attention a little more. They can play around without being out there 4.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are really driven and are into it, you know, they'll practice 4, 5, 6 hours a day, or they'll play an 18-hole round. But our industry is looking at a lot of things. There's frisbee golf. There's soccer golf, where you make a big hole in the green, and they actually kick a soccer. Getting them out and seeing how much fun it is to play on 40, 50, 60, 100 acres of turf with water and bunkers and stuff.
Yeah.
And then if they choose to, you know, put a club in their hand and a golf ball, at least we've exposed them to it. So we're trying to find fun ways to get youngsters into the game.
For you, Terry, why do you think that, you know, the trend is kind of treaded in a different way, where, you know, you don't see kids, you know, you see those numbers kind of dwindling for the younger crowd getting involved in the game of golf? Why do you think that is so, Terry?
Well, number one, we lost Tiger, and, you know, they're from 93 to 2000. Kids wanted to be Tiger Woods, you know, dressed like him and everything. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I say Ricky's coming back a little bit. But the other part of it is, you know, instant gratification, you know, the electronics that youngsters use, and iPods and iPads and everything else. And, you know, it's a time factor, I think, is that it's much harder to hold the attention of a youngster, which is really required for golf. You know, football, basketball, baseball, and you've got the bang-bang aspect of it. And golf doesn't quite have that. So it takes a unique individual, and it takes an idol at the PGA level to really get them into it if they're not into it already.
Terry Kilday, the director of marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. So, you know, this is, a really cool initiative for you guys, Terry, to try to pique that interest for youngsters in the game of golf. What other promotions do you guys have going on right now at your courses?
Well, we've got, first of all, Eagle Eye and Hawk Hollow are just in incredible shape. So
yeah,
that's one of the big promotions. Our greens survived and everything. But our twilight rates kick in every day at 3 at all 5 of our courses. If your listeners have a youngster that hasn't been exposed to golf, Little Hawk is incredibly inexpensive. It's a realistic-looking course that is all strictly putting. But we've got the Falcon with a little bit less distance, doesn't overwhelm a youngster. And we have what I feel is very, very aggressive rates at both the Falcon and Woodside for youngsters to play. You know, they can walk nine holes with the Falcon for like $9.
Oh, that's great stuff. Well, I tell you what, I got to bring my cousin up here and definitely get him involved. I'm trying to help out and introduce him to the game, Terry. And he seems to be kind of getting a feel for it. So I think I may have introduced him to something that he could play for years and years to come.
You can take it from cradle to grave, that's for sure. I'm living proof of that. I was out there before it started here now.
Right. That is so true. Before I let you go, Terry, how has business been going so far? Increase from last summer at all? And any improvements to the golf experience that you have made in comparison to previous years?
Well, we had a brutal spring. I don't have to tell anybody who lives here that stuff. So April, but we've caught up. We're really already ahead in rounds. The biggest thing we've done, if your listeners haven't been out, Hawk Hollow has been completely redone inside. Pro Shop is incredibly beautiful right now. The grill was all done, so there's a fresh look there.
Mm-hmm.
But, Al, I think, still the biggest thing we strive to do is treat you, the customer, with a great deal of service, and we give you at all five courses a product that is manicured. You're respected all the way around, whether it's at the bag staff, in the pro shop, and for sure our beverage cart girls are doing an incredible job. So if your listeners come out, I think they're going to get, and I hate to use this expression, but they're going to get the country club experience at a daily fee course.
Without a doubt. I tell you what, going out there last summer and getting to experience your beautiful courses, Terry, I mean, I had the time of my life out there, and I plan on going this weekend, just to give you a heads up.
So. All right. Well, you give me a shout. And Al, I sure appreciate all you do to help our industry here in the greater Lansing area.
Hey, no problem, Terry. You make it happen. I just put you on the air, brother.
So, there you go.
All right, there you have it. Terry Kilday, the director of marketing for a Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. Hey, Terry, you take care, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, Al. Thank you again very much.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gents, well, let's hit the first break. When we come back, yes, we got to talk about the incredible action that was the World Cup yesterday, the U.S. of A. holding it down over Ghana. Oh, we'll talk about that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Matt Lutke and Alex Sharg. Matt, we haven't had you on the show for quite some time. How you feeling, man?
I'm feeling good. It has been a while. My voice is a little tenuous right now, so I'm going to try and keep it reserved. I'm not going to try and get too riled up.
I won't rile you
so
up too
much. So we won't
much.
Have any Chris Paul versus Tony Parker discussions.
None of that today.
I'm going to keep it
We'll
keep
it calm
today.
For you. Yeah. We'll try. Well, it's kind of hard for me talking about World Cup soccer because goal! I mean, I lost my voice last night.
It was exciting.
It was pretty exciting. If you didn't hear it, folks, here's just a snippet of the incredible, incredible game that was for the U.S. with their win over Ghana yesterday evening.
Great start here. Can Clint Dempsey score yet? The U.S. ahead, incredibly, within seconds. Ellis from the back. Bradley's in there. Susie to take it.
What an incredible game yesterday. The USA topping Ghana 2-1. Man, oh, man. You know what, Matt? Looking at just on my Instagram and my Twitter, that game took place at 6 o'clock. I had just got off work. I worked pretty late yesterday, just finishing up some stuff in the office. I'm with intern Andre Sims. We just finished some editing for the TV show, and we leave. And I'm giving Andre a ride to his car. We had heard the goal right over the air, both losing our minds. And Andre's like, yeah, I'm about to go home and watch this entire match. I'm like, what? I mean, I just can't believe, I think this year can really be a huge year as far as aiding in the popularity right here in the States for soccer. Because you start to see, just looking at last night's telecast, I talked about at the top of the hour, how they had the shots from Afghanistan and Chicago and New York. just from people, just thousands of people losing their minds watching the World Cup. I think this can be a really a trademark year for many to be introduced to the game and to really spark a lot of interest. It was kind of cool watching that entire game, and it was fun to watch.
It was a great match, and you know, it seems like every 4 years America picks up a little steam as far as soccer is concerned.
Yeah.
Like I know 2010, like I was very into it. And you know, obviously they fell in the quarterfinals, but you know, to get to where they are now, and now it looks like they have a decent shot to get out of group play. I mean, the farther they go, the better it is for American soccer as a whole.
Right.
And to start the tournament out in that fashion was fantastic. I mean, I took the day off yesterday. I sat and I watched 90 minutes of scoreless action between Nigeria and Iran.
Oh, you watched that one? Right.
And then, you know, 30 seconds into the game, America scores, and it's just like, finally, something happens. And then it's 80 more minutes of just like, you
back
know,
and forth.
Fingernail biting,
yeah.
Intense, just the amount of dread that you feel as a soccer fan watching when your team is up by one. And the other team is dominating play. I think it's unparalleled in sports. You could tell that Ghana was going to break through sooner or later,
right.
And you were just praying that the Americans would hold on. And
right.
Of course, Ghana does score, and then seconds later, America scores again, and you know, everybody's rejoicing all over again. But it was just a roller coaster of a game, super entertaining to watch. I'm excited for the rest of the tournament.
It was fun. And you bring up, you know, kind of the back and forth scoreless action, even though, and this is what I try to convey to many people, because I talk to my mom about soccer all the time. My mom's like, soccer, sometimes it ends 0-0. I'm like, yeah, that's true, Mom. But when watching it, especially in the World Cup, you see the best of the best, first of all, in the world going at it. And even though there may be a lot of scoreless action going on, it's still intense because one goal can change the course of a team's future in the blink of an eye. And that's why you're so engaged, and that's why I'm sitting there watching. Even though U.S. had that 1-0 lead to start the game, you saw Ghana come back, and it's like, okay, you're instantly, you know, chewing your fingernails off. I mean, it was an unbelievable game. And, you know, I think the key for the World Cup, watching it, you know, this phrase kind of entered my mind. You got to bend but not break in the World Cup. Even though, you know, you saw U.S., they had that one goal lead there, and you're sitting there watching it and say, okay, well, if they do give up a goal here, they got to definitely salvage that momentum and answer right back. And when that goal for Ghana happened, I'm sitting like, okay, you're bending now, and if they score one more time, I think the U.S. are done. But they did a great job of answering that. I think that's the key, man, because any moment, any goal can change the course of the action. And like I said, in the blink of an eye, and you got to constantly, and I give a lot of props to those soccer players because that's constant action. The clock does not stop. You're up and down running for 45 minutes. You take a break and you come back out and do it for 45 more. That you got to be a remarkable athlete to be in that type of shape. It's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, I mean, they run something like 7 miles.
It's crazy.
During a match.
Oh,
and you know, it's not like other American sports where you have commercial breaks
right
every 10 minutes.
Exactly.
I mean, there's nothing. And sure, you know, guys go down with injuries or kind of, you know, fake injuries or embellish them at least. Then you have a couple minutes that run off the clock. But, I mean, they're not just standing around. I mean,
right.
It's a lot. It's intense. And to just see, you know, the back and forth action, I mean, in like, you know, from the 80th minute on,
right.
That was as good as it gets in sports. I mean,
I agree.
Just intense, you know, every single little play mattered. I mean, it looked like the U.S. was going to go up 2-0 and like the, well, no, actually, it looked like Ghana was going to take control after the 82nd minute, and then the U.S. had a little spurt.
Right.
And then they finally scored with Brooks, and it was just the whole time when they're up 1-0, it's just like they need to score on one of these counters, get a 2-goal lead. And then you can really play it safe. But, you know, you can't go into a shell up one goal
in
the World
all.
Cup because these teams are too good.
That's what separates the good teams from the great teams. You know what? The U.S. did a great job yesterday, Matt, of just kind of taking advantage of what they were given. I mean, because if you look at just the stats and the time of possession, I mean, Ghana, they battered the U.S. in goal time. Just, I mean, if you look at it, they outshot the U.S. 21-8. 21-8. That's a huge differential in soccer. Dominating the ball with 62% of possession in the match. So, I mean, when the U.S. had opportunities, which were very rare, as you see, I mean, you talk about a 21-8 goal difference and Ghana handling the ball more than 50% of the time, the U.S. to win a 2-1, they took advantage of those little opportunities, those little windows of hope, especially to start the game. I mean, they come out the door and find an opening, and boom, they're up. And then, like you said, I mean, after Ghana scores, they had, you know, they were very aggressive and were able to get back on the boards and to get that 2-1 lead. I mean, they took advantage of that, and we'll see if that can be sustained moving forward. But now there are some question marks for me now, Matt, because now you lose a huge, huge player, you know, one of the hallmarks of this team, in Jozy Altidore. It was tough seeing him go out, and not only him, but also Matt Besler, who also went out in that game due to his injury was looked not as serious as Jozy's, but still, when you're taking on a team like, you know, Portugal, who has the great Cristiano Ronaldo, it's going to be tough. Alex, did you catch it yesterday?
I did catch it yesterday, and what I noticed was, and I don't know if Matt touched on this yet, but Ghana's goal was better than both of the USA's goals, in my opinion. The Dempsey one was nice, but I thought that Ghana was more crafty with scoring. And the other part of it was that when the U.S. was playing, the worst thing that they could have let happen was the second half, Ghana just pressuring the net so much. And you knew that it was going to tie up and possibly end in a tie, and that would have been the worst thing for the United States. But what resiliency. What resiliency by the USA to kind of conquer that and add another goal to beat Ghana. And yeah, those are my initial thoughts. But more, I'm going to give you guys some more thoughts in a second about just the World Cup aura and the World Cup atmosphere in general.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I nailed that prediction yesterday. I predicted 2-1, and you know, it was 2-1. You know, I looked like kind of a genius there, but I didn't toot my own horn. But yeah, now they play, though, Portugal, a team. Again, they have Cristiano Ronaldo on that team, and it's going to be interesting to see if Jozy Altidore can be ready for that game. Right now, it's kind of up in the air right now. A lot of question marks here and there. You know, listen to analysts this morning on ESPN. I mean, there's kind of mixed thoughts about it, left and right. We don't know. I guess we have to hear from the mouth himself, but, you know, we'll see.
And he's a key player because he's... He's so wide,
right?
You know, he can kind of keep defenders on his back and possess the ball, and that was the thing that they were missing. I mean, like you said, Ghana had what, 62% of possession.
62%.
If this game was in the 1980s or 70s, where they didn't have the score constantly in the corner of the screen, and you were just kind of casually watching, you would think Ghana was up like 5-0.
They were
dominant.
Yep.
And to get that goal 30 seconds in was huge. And Clint Dempsey is. He's a cool guy.
He is a cool guy. I like him.
Every 4 years, you hear his name, and it's like, wow, yeah, he can play. And, you know, losing Altidore, though, going forward, it's going to hurt him. It really is. And if he can come back, I think that's huge because they need someone else who can kind of keep the pressure going. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know if you guys noticed this, but on the broadcast, for as much as they talked about Michael Bradley, he did next to nothing for the entire game. I mean, it was like every single time they'd mount an attack— You know, you'd hear the announcers be like, oh, well, here's a chance for Michael Bradley to orchestrate something. Nothing.
No, he did nothing.
Zilch,
yeah.
Zip, zero. He didn't do anything. I did more to contribute to the win than he did. So, obviously, he's going to play better, but they need, you know, more bodies, you know, going forward in on the attack
and, yeah,
to kind
honestly,
of keep things going.
Yeah, honestly, I think if you look at those numbers, again, 62% of possession, you know, for Ghana, and they get outshot 21-8. If they play like that against Portugal, I don't see them winning
I don't see them winning either. But on the other side, I mean, you look at Portugal's opener, they got destroyed
they got
by Germany.
Yeah, they did. They definitely did. So, I mean, that's the thing about soccer, man. You just never know. It's all about matchups. It's really interesting. And, Alex, you had one thing about the atmosphere of the World Cup?
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but they showed some locations in Chicago and New York.
Oh, yeah, I mentioned that.
You mentioned that to start. Sorry, listeners, joining a little bit later. But, no, yeah, I mean, that just shows that, considering that soccer is not the American sport, it's still widely celebrated throughout the United States. And as much as all the other countries, and when Brooks was on the air yesterday, he was talking about the passion that comes with soccer. And you doubt every time whether the Americans and the United States have the same passion as, say, Brazil or Argentina fans, Argentinians. But after watching yesterday and seeing all the locations and the passion from the fans, I think it's right up there.
Yeah, it was fun stuff. All right, guys, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Tigers. Man, Justin Verlander. Ugh, It was not great last night for Justin. And also Jarrell Campbell has decommitted from MSU. We'll talk about that and so much more. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, the Detroit Tigers, just when you think they're out of the rut, they dig themselves back in it. After a subpar outing from Justin Verlander, it really saw the Tigers. Now, you know, looking at, Matt, just how this team has kind of dwindled, you know, these past few weeks, now you're looking at only a half-game lead. That's it. That's all. Against the Royals. Kansas City is right in back of them. Kansas City, you know, today, if they do tap the Tigers, hey, we're looking at a whole fiasco here. JV did not look great. Omar Infante, he had 4 RBIs for the Royals. Of course, he's a former Tiger. And Verlander allowed 7 runs for the second consecutive outing. I just got to say it, guys. I'm going to say it. I'm just going to jump into it and say it. It's been on my mind for a long time. You guys know I've alluded to it. I don't think Justin Verlander is the Verlander of old, and I think he's kind of lost a step, without a doubt. I don't think we'll ever see the Justin Verlander of old. I think that Verlander is up and gone. I don't know what's going on with the man. I don't know. And, you know, maybe he's just wear and tear on his arm. Maybe it's Kate Upton. I have no idea. The man needs to get focused, though, because he does not look like the JV at old. And, you know, how many times have we seen an athlete kind of get into a whole high-profile relationship, if you will, with a model or a superstar? I'm not blaming it on Kate Upton at all. But how many times have we kind of seen that and kind of thought to ourselves, maybe that brother's not focused?
Yeah.
You know, because that definitely crossed my mind looking at last night's just total fiasco of JV. I'm like, maybe he's focusing too much on Kate Upton. And then you see, you know, I don't know if you guys saw last week, the pictures of them kind of cuddled up and kissing during the NHL finals, you know, sitting in the crowd. I'm like, okay, JV, you should be in a bullpen somewhere working on something. I don't know. But I'm just going to say it. Justin Verlander is not looking great right now. And you know what? For the Tigers, if that starting pitching isn't there, maybe it's time to pull out your hair. Maybe that should be a new catchphrase. Because I tell you what, that's all you can rely on. If the starting pitching for the Tigers is not coming out and doing its job, you can't rely on that bullpen. And right now, you can't rely on anybody at bat to be consistent other than V-Mart and Miguel Cabrera. You know what? I talked last week about where that panic meter is. I'm putting it up to a 9 right now, guys. It's up to a 9. It's up to a 9 for me right now.
Well, I mean, the division lead being less than a game, obviously not ideal. But at the same time, you have to take into account that the Royals are absolutely scorching red hot right now.
They're a good team right now.
And they'll come back to earth. They're not that good where they're going to string together 20 wins or something. I mean, they might have a good month. But I don't see them keeping it going long enough to really contend and to win the division. I think they'll fade a little bit. The key is, how does Detroit kind of handle their business? Because like you said, Verlander, there's something there. And I think really it's just wear and tear on his arm.
Kate Upton, man. No,
and hey, like you said, we've seen celebrity girlfriends.
Look at Gabrielle Union, done to Dwayne Wade. No, I'm joking.
Well,
but
I mean, look at A-Rod's entire career, basically.
Yeah, I know, right?
Look at Tony Romo when he dated Jessica Simpson way back when. Although it's not like he, you know, started dating somebody else and immediately became a great quarterback. He's still Tony Romo.
Right, it's true.
How about Lamar Odom?
But it just doesn't help.
He's still heartbroken.
Lamar Odom. The Kardashians are a whole other class of a celebrity girlfriend. That is, might as well just poison your career. Not a good idea.
That's true.
Chris Humphries, too.
Chris Humphries, oh my gosh.
Boy.
This is a trend here. Ooh. We're not crazy for thinking this, you know what I mean?
No, but still. There's a pattern there. But I think for the Tigers, they just got to regroup. I mean, get out of the Kansas City series, steal one, end Kansas City's win streak, and keep things going. Because like we've said time and time again, it's a long season.
It is.
They've got so much time to right the ship. But with Verlander, it is a bit of a blinking red light with the warning sign.
I think they got to be looking at how Max Scherzer, his last outing, I mean, his first complete game, he'll be on the mound today. that's the type of rebound you want after looking at what JV did last night. You know,
right.
So I think Max will come out and kind of right the ship, hopefully, with today's game. But still, I mean, I remember we were talking a few weeks ago. I mean, the Tigers looked like the best team in the league. I mean, they had what, a 5-6 game lead. No way nobody's catching them. All of a sudden, boom, shakalaka. It's at a 9 for me. I'm sticking with 9, Alex.
All right. Well, in regards to Verlander, with the Kate Upton thing, yeah, I mean, she's could be distracting.
Oh, Matt Kemp and Rihanna. I just thought about that one, too. Look at Matt Kemp and Rihanna. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, we'll do a top 5 celebrity, athlete celebrity couple.
We should.
But in regards to Kate Upton, it could be distracting. But aside from wear and tear on the arm, after watching his pitches yesterday, it's not that his velocity is down. I don't think that's the main reason for why he's pitching poorly. He's just not accurate. I mean, he's leaving hanging fastballs down the middle. He's letting Infante have a pull one to left. I mean, it's not that he's losing his arsenal or his fastball isn't hot. He's just not accurate. And I don't think that stems from his arm being a little bit weird and teared. I don't think that has to do with the velocity. Like I said,
it's just focus,
just has to do with focus. And I'm not going to say it's Kate Upton because we obviously don't know that. But it could be, it's a very high possibility. However, I think that he's just not in a groove. He's a streaky pitcher. I think we know that. You've seen him. When he gets rolling, he's rolling. And when he's accurate, he's accurate. He rarely leaves a mistake up the middle when he's pitching a complete game. So for me, I think that he's still in a little bit of a funk. Give him a little bit more time. If it comes to the end of July and he's still pitching like this, yeah, I'd be a little bit worried. But there's a lot of baseball to play. He has playoff experience, so keep that in mind as well, along with a lot of the other Tiger players. In response to the Tigers losing, Matt said it himself, the Royals have won 8 straight. They're a hot team right now. But the Tigers have beat the Twins. They played well against the Red Sox. There's still 2 more games. If they get swept by the Royals, I'd say it's a 9. But I think they're going to come back strong. As you saw, the hitting was great last night. J.D. Martinez with a grand slam. I think there's a lot to look at still.
All right, well, we'll definitely see. If you got thoughts on this about the Tigers, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, J.Rue Campbell, former MSU commit, he came out and made an announcement on WXYZ-TV, Channel 7 News in Detroit, saying, quote, "I would say I have opened up the recruiting process again and decommitted from Michigan State." And again, that aired late Monday night. Quote, "I'm just trying to enjoy the recruitment process for my last year in high school." Of course, J. Rue, the man who was caught on tape body slamming a security guard. He was sentenced to 60 days in jail, probation, and community service last month for that assault. Now he must turn himself in on July 28th, which does give him time to complete summer school. Interesting stuff, guys. This came as no surprise for me. You know, that J. Rue came out and decommitted. I mean, if you look at various websites, you know, from 247sports.com to just about every recruiting website, they had no longer listed J. Rue as a Michigan State commit. And we all know how D'Antonio runs his program. He wants guys of character. He always talks about that. He always harps on that. He wants guys to come in who are mentally focused and humble to go out there and carry themselves the right way, both on the field and off of it. When this whole thing ensued, and especially looking at how, you know, even the jury found, well, the judge found to J. Rue to be in fault here and sentenced him to 60 days in jail, community service, and probation. J. Rue apologized. He was definitely in the wrong in the situation. D'Antonio harps on character, as I said. He doesn't want that kind of kid in his program. And I was not surprised that, you know, he probably decommitted. Now, D'Antonio, we haven't heard from his mouth because they can't comment on a kid who just verbally commits. Only if there's a national letter of intent can someone from the football program or any athletic program comment on a commit, if you will. Now, he does still have offers, which is great. I'm great that he does because, you know, looking at that interview from last night on Channel 7, he seemed very remorseful and sorry that this whole thing went down. You know, he's still a kid. This is another thing we have to put in perspective. He's still a kid. He's still in high school. This is a situation that certainly, I hope, taught him a lot. And it seems as though, reading his comments and looking at that interview, he seems to be a kid who's sorry and wants to do the right thing now and change his life around. I believe in second chances. I think that you guys do too. I'm glad that he does still have offers on the table from schools like Cincinnati, Miami, and LSU. So I'm going to be watching closely on how he handles himself, though, from here on out. Because looking at this whole thing now, what he still has, what, a year left to play? I'm going to be following if he screws up off the field, if he's still got that hot streak. I believe he's taking anger management classes now. From what he does on here on out, he can either make or break his college football career because he can show that, hey, I'm a new guy, I've turned a new leaf, I want to be successful in life, or he could screw up again, showing us all that he still has a long way to go. I hope he does make the right decision.
Yeah, I think we all do, and I think more importantly for J.Rue in the future, he's got to pick the right school when he decides to go to college, and I think he's got to pick, and I think Michigan State is almost the perfect school for him just because they, you know, every time you hear about the Michigan State football program, you hear that it's a family atmosphere. We're a family here.
Right.
We take care of each other. We care about each other. That's the kind of institutional, you know, environment that I think he needs going forward. I don't know if Cincinnati, Miami, or LSU is the best school for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would almost be better for him to go to a smaller school, tighter knit, you know, football program. Somewhere where he can grow as a human being and have a support system in place that he can flourish in.
So you don't think he can do that at Cincinnati and Miami?
Miami, Florida has a history of, you know, off-the-field incidents dating back to the 80s.
Just watch the U.
You know that. I mean, Cincinnati, maybe. I don't know if I trust Tommy Tuberville too much. He bolted from Texas Tech to take that job anyway.
Mm-hmm.
LSU, I don't know. They've got a history of off-field stuff, too. Maybe he looks at a directional school. And Alex and I were talking about this before the show. You know, maybe it's a Western or Central destination. And if he goes there, and he could still flourish. I mean, the off-the-field stuff doesn't change the fact that he's a very talented football player.
Right, right.
And he has, you know, every chance to succeed at the next level. He just needs structure in place that can help him find that route. You know, he doesn't need – he's had a tough life. Obviously.
Tough background.
Exactly. So going forward, he needs to pick the right situation for him. I wouldn't follow the, you know, so much of the prestige of the schools you're going to. I would look more at the environment you're putting yourself into for the next 4 to 5 years.
Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, keep in mind that there are some schools that may not know the full extent of the J.Rue Campbell situation yet. Looking at some past recruiting examples, if you remember a guy by the name of DeMar Dorsey, that University of Michigan recruited a couple years ago. This guy had a whole pass down in Florida. A lot of the Florida schools backed off of him. Michigan kept going at him. But then when they found out, Michigan finally pulled back on him, and then he went to a small school in Florida.
Well, was that a situation where, I mean, his name was all over the papers when he did something wrong?
He had a past thing. Yeah, it was over the papers,
and
it was something that he did when he was younger. But some of the schools backed out on him. Michigan finally found out the true situation. And it was kind of similar to the Campbell where Dorsey was remorseful. He was sorry for what he did. He was ready to move on and get a fresh start. That was one of the reasons why he picked Michigan to commit, because it was a new start. It was away from Florida. It was something new. But in this situation, it's a little bit different because this guy, like Matt said, It's that family atmosphere. He needs the right environment. Although other schools can offer that, with Michigan State having Curtis Blackwell being so close to the Castle Tech program, he kind of brought him into that close family atmosphere. It's going to be very difficult for another coach to reach into that Castle Tech program to kind of put his hand on the shirt of J.Rue and pull him into a family atmosphere. There's no rapport already in place.
But I will say this, though. The fact that he is only a junior going to a senior year, he still has a year to grow. He still has another year. And a year can make a difference, you know. And you know, I'm not the same guy I was a year ago and the year before that and the year before that. A year to grow and mature and to reflect on the situation for him and to kind of right the ship, if you will, in the senior year, I think could mean a lot. And he could definitely show a lot of people that he's not the guy that everybody thinks he is. And I think that's why I'm going to be looking at his senior year really, really close, because he could either go one way where he really changes everybody's perception of him and he becomes this swan song story, if you will, or he can go in the other way where he kind of confirms what everybody's thinking. So this year will be key for for him.
Right.
So,
and keep in mind, 60 days in jail starting July 28th. Right. I was also talking
That's
going to
be an awakening. I mean, just imagine in jail as in high school. That's going to be that's a rude awakening there.
Not just that, but you're missing all summer camp.
Oh,
you're missing the first couple games of the year for football. Who knows if he's going to be able to even play when he gets back. There might be some academic stuff going on. So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot to go over with that.
Yeah, that should be the ultimate slap in the face. So, yeah we'll see. All right.
One quick thing to add, guys, in response to how this will affect Michigan State going forward, the only thing they lose here is a relationship with Castech real quickly, because when it comes to quarterbacks, they have Brian Lewerke, Elite 11 quarterback. He's just as good, if not better.
University.
I think that he might be better than
Really?
J. Rue. Yeah.
Wow.
This guy's really, really accurate. He has just as much mobile legs as J. Rue.
Okay.
I've watched a lot of his film. He's got a great arm. But another comparison to Michigan, back in 2008, Michigan had two quarterbacks committed. They had Shavadrick Beaver and Tate Forcier. Shavadrick Beaver decommitted, went to Tulsa. Never heard about him ever again. Mm. Forcier turned out to be a decent quarterback. But the point is, Shavadrick Beaver, he was the number 4 ranked dual threat QB. J. Rue Campbell, I think he would number 2 or 3 ranked dual threat QB. A guy ahead of Shavadrick Beaver, Taj Boyd out of Clemson. Brian Lewerke, obviously not as high ranked, but there are always better options on the table. They still have a quarterback coming in. It's still the one per year. I don't think it's nothing to fret over.
Yeah, and one more thing for me too.
Yeah.
I wonder if Michigan State would be taking the same stance 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you look at the success that they've had and the program that they've built. If they weren't in this position coming off a Rose Bowl, coming off a Big Ten title, do you think they would roll the dice
on J. Rue? That's a great
question.
You know, that's an interesting perspective because, you know, now the target is on their back. Everybody's watching what the MSU program does, you know, and D'Antonio preaches character, and you got to practice what you preach.
And they don't necessarily need to take the risk.
Right,
you know,
they're kind of in
a position where they can kind of handpick the guys
right.
they want.
That's true. It's not like they need J. Rue Campbell at this program. So I definitely agree with that. All right, guys. Well, again, you can call in at, we only have 2 minutes left, so leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. We don't have time to get to top five Tuesday, so you know what I'm going to do, Matt, really quickly.
And pick top
what
one.
What is your top moment in World Cup history? Go ahead.
All right. England, 1966 versus Germany. 2-2 tie going into extra time. Jeff Hurst scores a goal in the 98th minute off the crossbar, disputed still to this day whether or not it was actually in. England would add another one for their only World Cup title.
That is on my list as well. And I tell you what, my number one, though, is kind of a personal one for me because this is when I fell in love with the World Cup and started watching in 2006, my sophomore year of high school. Zinedine Zidane.
That's on mine, too.
Headbutt. Oh, yeah. Zinedine Zidane, his headbutt. I mean, I remember watching that. It was France versus Italy in 2006. It was supposed to be, you know, Zinedine had came out and said, this is my final year. And boy, did he went out with a bang. I mean, a headbutt.
Literally.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right to the chest. I'm trying to look at his name here. Who was that he headbutted? Was it Horacio Elizondo? I think that's his name. I believe, the referee.
Right.
Exactly. So, but anyway, if you have not seen the Zinedine Zidane headbutt, go look it up again. France versus Italy in 2006.
It's tough. He was an amazing player.
He was
amazing
great.
Amazing
player. He was so good, man.
And that just tarnished his legacy forever.
Yes, it did. It was supposed to be his swan song.
Right.
You know, that was supposed to be a great send-off for him. So, it was fun stuff. All right, again, we are out of time, but thanks so much for joining me on today's Current Sports. Thanks a lot to Terry Gilday, the director of golf properties for Hawk Hollow. Thanks a lot, Terry. Really appreciate it. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKRE's Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Tuesday. And hey, be easy, people.